Blog Talk Radio. Well, hello and welcome to Coach Cafe on Blog Talk Radio, the Law of Attraction place to meet, where we welcome coaches, teachers, authors, and experts to meet and share their wisdom to assist us all to experience self-empowerment. And tonight we're thrilled to welcome back to our show Rachel Grant, who has visited us before. She is a trauma recovery and relationship coach. And we are so excited that you joined us again, Rachel. But before we get into the show, I would like to introduce my wonderful co-host, Estra Roel. Estra is the founder of America's Life Purpose Coach. She is America's Life Purpose Coach, is a certified Law of Attraction Life Coach, Advanced Psych K Facilitator, and the co-author of the book 101 Great Ways to Enhance Your Career. Estra offers one-to-one life purpose coaching, the Love Course Workshop on the 7 Steps to Creating a Life of Unconditional Love, based on the book Love for No Reason by Marcy Shymoff, and webinars and talks on life purpose and the Law of Attraction. Her passion is definitely helping her clients to get in touch with their passions and highest purpose in order to live the lives they love. And you can reach Estra at www.americaslifepurposecoach.com.
Well, thank you so much, Kathleen. And just to return the appreciation, I would like to introduce you. Kathleen Martin is a passionate, certified life and wellness coach who has spent her life helping people to get on track and stay on track to allowing optimal health and wellness in all areas of life, body, mind, and spirit. She is the founder of Limitless Life Coaching and the Awesome Health and Wellness Club, as well as being a trained happiness generator workshop facilitator, teaching the 7 steps to happiness from the inside out from the highly acclaimed book Happy for No Reason by Marcy Shymoff. Kathleen is also the author of the e-book Understanding Universal Laws 101, The Missing Education, and The Longevity Blueprint. So if you want to experience real changes in your life and health, get in touch with Kathleen at www.limitlesslifecoaching.com.
Thanks, Estra. And we welcome our listeners to join in on our conversation in the chat room or by calling 646-649-1015. That's 646-649-1015. We would also like to thank our listeners who have chosen to follow us and remind you that if you like what you hear, you can follow us by clicking the follow button located on the show page under our picture. So we are welcoming tonight Rachel Grant, who is the owner and founder of Rachel Grant Coaching and is a trauma recovery and relationship coach. With her support, clients learn to identify and break patterns of thought and behavior that keep them from recovering from past sexual abuse or making changes in their relationships. Rachel holds an MA in counseling psychology. With this training in human behavior and cognitive development, she provides a compassionate and challenging approach for her clients while using coaching as opposed to therapeutic models. For many people, coaching is more appropriate than intensive therapy or analysis. Rachel is a member of the International Coach Federation and San Francisco Coaches. So welcome back, Rachel.
Thanks, Kathleen. Good to hear your voice again.
Thank you. Thank you. And this is going to be a really interesting show for everyone, no matter where they are in their lives, I know, because one of the things that we described here is that we are wired to automatically assign a meaning or interpretation to each experience we have. And then we have a craving to explain why things have gone the way they have. And this happens without conscious effort on our part, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And then this leads this eventually will lead to patterns of thought and behavior that take root and influence the way we feel and react. So this is very, very important for us to understand. I know you're going to help us to understand how the brain becomes wired as a result of abuse and learn techniques for challenging the negative and challenging the, and learn these techniques to challenge the negative patterns of thought and behavior. This is really important in life. I'm so glad we're talking about this tonight on our show because this is going to help people deeply to change some of these thought processes and behavior.
So
how did you arrive at where you are, you know, to specialize in trauma recovery and relationship coaching?
Sure. Well, so in my own journey as a survivor of sexual abuse, I went on to go through some of the traditional routes of recovery. I read books, I went to therapy, went to groups and various things. And throughout that experience, I, of course, was making some connections and coming to some understanding about, you know, why my behavior was the way it was and why I thought certain things, but I kind of kept hitting the same wall over and over again where I would have an insight, have a realization, but was never really guided to that next step of, well, what do I do about it? How do I actually transform it? How do I actually move away from that? So for me, as I started noticing over and over again that that answer to that question was missing, I really set out to figure it out for myself. And so I started reading much more deeply, did my master's in counseling psychology, and just started kind of gathering together all the various pieces that had made a difference for me in my journey. And along the way, one of the things that I really came across that made a big difference for me was this idea and understanding of the neurology behind trauma and really just life experiences in general. They don't have to be severe. The brain is doing this, whether it's a minor just everyday sunny day or whether it's something very difficult and hard that you're going through. And so I began piecing all this together and decided that, you know, what for me would be the best way to help others and share this information was as a coach. And so just kind of set forth putting together the business, putting together the program that I've created Beyond Surviving and writing the book so that all of those pieces are in place so that when I work with clients, I can really take them through those stages of identifying the false beliefs, skills and tools for challenging them, and then communication and relationship techniques so that they can really build, you know, a whole picture of who they are and start living a life that's really free and open for them.
That's great. That's great. Such a needed approach.
Yeah, I think so. We're hoping to get the word out more and more, you know, that coaching is a viable option, you know, for people who are survivors who are looking for support. You know, generally speaking, therapy is the more traditional route, but there are more and more coaches nowadays taking on this particular area of work and with great effect.
Excellent. Great.
Well, Rachel, when you were describing this topic, you said our brain is wired because of the abuse. And so is this the same thing as like a self-fulfilling prophecy? Or are we, you know, do people experience certain, you know, attribute meaning and experience certain things kind of like you would for a self-fulfilling prophecy, or is it different?
Okay, yeah. Well, so let's explore kind of what it means to be wired. That'll be very, you know, term. And then we'll talk about how that relates to this other concept, which is self-fulfilling prophecy, which is a pretty kind of buzzword out there. So, you know, the brain is basically composed of neurons and neuronal pathways, and the way that messages get sent is through those neuronal pathways. So anytime a neuronal pathway fires and two fire at the same time, they become connected. So there's this kind of this saying, neurons that fire together wire together. Mm-hmm. So they become very tightly woven. And so whenever we have an experience, you know, we're creating this like large network, you know, kind of like a roadmap in our brain. So, you know, the hot sun makes us think about, you know, that time on the beach because there was this other day when those connections were created. So it's kind of this neural highway of information that's being passed around. And so whenever we have a new experience, a brand new experience, a particular neuronal pathway is created. And so take, for example, like eating pumpkin pie for the very first time, you know, at Thanksgiving. Well, the next time you experience pumpkin pie, say when you're walking by a storefront and you smell that pumpkin pie, well, that same neuronal pathway that holds the initial experience is lit up again. So not only is it lit up again, it's now modified. It incorporates your first time experience plus this new experience. And as that happens, that neuronal pathway is expanded and reinforced because of this reactivation. So now the same thing begins to happen when we're abused or when we have a negative experience. So particular thoughts and emotions become wired, and we re-experience these thoughts or emotions whenever that neuronal pathway is lit up by a present-day experience.
Hmm.
Does that make sense so far?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's a great explanation. Very clear, yeah.
Right, so then our trouble becomes... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and at the same time, fortunately, it's happening for very pleasant experiences. So,
that's right.
Right? So we, you know, it's great that we have that going on at the same time, you know.
Yeah, exactly, and that's going to play later when we get into talking about the strategies for challenging the negative. That's going to play a major role, the fact that we can actually use positive ideas
in place
of the negative. Yeah. So what happens oftentimes is that we our present-day responses and thoughts and emotions are kind of nothing but these old neuronal pathways lighting up, yet without intervention, they become deeper and deeper and stronger, so breaking the resulting pattern of thought and behavior becomes more and more difficult. But so you begin to have this idea, like say one of your initial ideas that you kind of form as a result of the abuse is something like, you know, people can't be trusted, right? And so every time you're engaging with people and there's trust on the line, you have another negative experience, it reinforces that idea, right? And so now the I can't trust people idea neuronal net pathway becomes even stronger. So the next time you go to try to work with somebody and trust, it takes that much more effort to actually do it. And we become prone to actually just looking for the non-trustworthiness, right? And so in some ways, we do start to only see and reinforce the ideas and beliefs that have become kind of integrated and patterns that we're connected to over and over again. So in this way, it does sort of become this circular loop. We just kind of get stuck in a loop because we want to trust, but then we have the neuronal pathway that kind of gets lit up on its own without a lot of intervention. If there's no intervention, it'll just go. The brain just goes where it's taught to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
It likes to stay on the path that it's on. And so you can be there wanting to turn left, like I really want to go left today, but the experience happens and there you are going right again. And so a lot of the work that I do with clients is helping them at that intervention stage, skills and techniques that will help them pause and interrupt the brain and the sequence that the brain is in so that they can then go left. And every time they go left instead of right, you know, they're weakening the old neuronal pathway and reinforcing and building a new one in a new direction.
Right, right. It really is a training. It's a mind training, right? I mean, it's
absolutely
it's very, yeah, I've recently realized this much more, clearly that it really is just like you have to train that muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't let it go weak again. You know what I mean? Like you have to, especially if you're very serious, you know, essentially, if you're very serious about changing this in your life, you must take control, you know, because your mind will just keep spewing that out.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
Unless you intervene, it will do it again and again. You have to take charge. Like, it's kind of like, your mind, to me, it's like this. It's like a, well, they call it monkey mind a lot too. But to me, it's like it's like, you know, it's like a baby, or a puppy. It just takes off on its own, and it's going to go here, there, and everywhere. And you have to, you know, bring it back, you know, and you are going to direct it.
That's right. And the wonderful difference between the one distinction between the baby and the dog analogy that you just used there, which is interesting, is that the baby will have the thought and then release it, have a new thought and then release it. Right.
Right.
But what we do is we have the thought and then we latch on and we go deeper.
Right.
And then we have another negative thought and then we have another negative thought. And then before we knew it, it's out in our behavior. It's in our life. You know, we're depressed. We're not working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes over. So, but you're very right on point to think of it as exercise. And it does feel like that. And I know when I first started doing this work, you know, the brain, it kind of hurts. You know,
your brain
kind of goes like, what are you doing here? Like, this is not usual. This is not what I want
right.
to be doing. It's kind of like, you know, when you start making your biceps lift those weights, they kind of push back and go, wait a minute, I don't want to do this. This isn't what I like. But after some time, your biceps come to expect that, okay, we're going to do this work, and that's how it's going to be, and you stay strong. And the same exact thing happens with the mind. That's a great analogy.
Well,
how can we – oh, sorry, go ahead, Esther.
It occurred to me, with because we all of us form those beliefs and those, you know, form those neural pathways from our experiences, that, you know, everybody has beliefs that aren't serving them that they need to work with in this way. But with abuse, you know, it's something that traumatic. Is it more difficult? I mean, it seems like that would be something that would be really, especially, you know, because that's often a repetitive experience.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that is more difficult to shift?
More heavy lifting involved?
Very heavy lifting.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing. I certainly had the impression when I was in my own journey of recovery that this was going to be hard work. And it was going to take a long time, and it was going to be the rest of my life, and I was going to have to always be dealing with this. And what I've come to discover is that there are certain ideas and beliefs that came out of the abuse for me that are a little bit stronger, right? And so they're the ones that I have to pay closer attention to, I have to do a little bit more work around. But like 90% of the effect was easy enough to work through and to process. And so I've found some of my relationship clients who have false beliefs about marriage or about dating or about the opposite mm-hmm. sex, like getting them past those false beliefs sometimes has been so much more work in some cases than mm-hmm. the work that I've done with my abuse uh-huh. survivors to help them move past. So it really, some of it's mentality, openness, how long a particular idea has been reinforced and been in use, and how kind of core or central it is, I think, to your identity. The closer it gets to being about who you think you are,
right,
as opposed to just something that you're doing, the harder it is to let go. And so it's usually much easier to eradicate those false beliefs that are tied to just general behavior and ideas, as opposed to like, this is something essential about how I identify myself.
Okay. Does that also have to do, Rachel, like this is some of the things that I question as a coach, too, and I see in certain approaches that to me can be something that ends up working against the person rather than for them, especially when they define themselves as that particular thing, right, like an abuse survivor. Or, you know, I think about this with, you know, really traumatic things like people who survived the Holocaust or people who consider themselves to be, were addicted to drugs or addicted to alcohol, that they were telling themselves that that's what they were.
Mm-hmm.
Or that's what they
mm-hmm.
are. They are in a survival of this. So doesn't it kind of then keep it active within them as a part of their identity?
I think so. That's part of the reason why, you know, for me, when I hit that place where I thought, you know, I don't really want to just survive my life, I'd really like
right.
to live it,
uh-huh.
I gave up identifying myself as a survivor and was like, well, you know, what does that then, you know, what identity then makes
mm-hmm.
sense for me or what comes next? And that's where I think, you know, moving people to this idea of beyond survivor is what I like them to embrace, because while the word surviving is in there, the idea is that you're past that. You're no longer this, you no longer have to identify and solely think of yourself in terms of the abuse, right? Mm-hmm. There's so much more to you. There's so much more available and open and possible for you, and you don't have to constantly be living your life around the abuse and talking about it and thinking about it and processing it, right? There is a time for that, I think, when we dig in really deep and we are that survivor, like we really are in it. I think there is a time when we dig in really deep and we are that addict. We are that person, you know, and we want to think about it and deal with that. But I also think there's a time to let go of that identity and identification and move on to the next role or the next way of being that you want to embrace.
That's right. It's more really of a choice then.
Yeah.
So how can we rewire the brain in order to break the patterns of thought and behavior that were created as a result of the abuse?
Okay, well, yeah, so what happens is we basically are programmed to do this, to interact with the world this way, that whenever things are happening, we really want to assign a meaning or an interpretation to each experience that we have. That goes back to that craving that we have to really explain why things have gone the way they have. And it is, it happens without a conscious effort, but then takes root as the neuronal pathway and then influences how we feel and how we react. And so to begin identifying the patterns of thought, we first have to develop the ability to separate what is actually happening from the interpretation or the emotion that follow. The mistake that we make or the error that we're in a lot of times thinking that it's all the same thing, right? It's all the big one big shebang. And so we'll get into some of the more deeper steps as we go along, but that very first step of identifying the what happened of a situation as just the bare bone facts. It's stripping away emotions, stripping away interpretation, and so you want, like just the facts, ma'am. So the interpretations and are basically what we come up with to explain why something happened. So, for example, I was a very cuddly little girl, and when the abuse started, I was with my grandfather sitting on the porch snuggling with him, and then he began molesting me, and part of what my brain did to try to make sense of what had just happened was, if I'm close and cuddly with people, bad things happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, the what happened was that he began touching me, and then my interpretation or my explanation was, hey, man, stay away from people. Don't get too close, And so that belief, of course, led me to be very suspicious of affection and avoided genuine affection with others.
Right.
So that's always the first step. It's to go back to any experience that you have and try to separate out the what happened from your interpretation. And the most beautiful thing about the program and the work that I do is that we actually don't have to go back to the exact moment of abuse. We don't have to go back there. Because what happens with this is that we replay these things over and over and over again, right? The abuse is just the jumping off point for the idea or the false belief. And then we then pick up the baton and continue it. You can look at present day experiences in your life and say, wow, when I sat down, for dinner today and my husband was 10 minutes late and he didn't show up on time and I got, super crazed and upset and, throwing the frying pan or whatever, you can say, all right, what was going on behind the scenes for me in that? And so, the what happened is the person was late. Maybe one of the interpretations is I'm not important. I'm not valuable. I don't matter, right? And so that belief of I don't matter could very well be tied all the way back to that first experience of abuse, but it's not absolutely necessary. The important thing is to identify the false belief, not the instigating problem. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. So
what you want to do is shift the belief. Once you shift the belief, your behavior then will reflect that.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So when you want to now get into that next stage of actually now shifting the belief, you're like, okay, great, I identified this belief, now what do I do with it? right? So that's the critical first step, is just first of all uncovering what's been running the show. But then to actually begin the work of rewiring, we go a step further. And that is to challenge the initial interpretation by looking for other possible explanations. So, for example, my grandfather molested me because he was selfish and he wasn't considering of me and he whatever. It wasn't because I was being cuddly, right? Mm-hmm. So you start to look for the alternative interpretations, and a couple of things begin to happen. First of all, you start to see that there are a ton of different reasons why things happen, mm-hmm. right? So we'll take a more lighthearted example, because this one kind of happens a lot, and it's one of these moments where people get into their interpretations and then act a fool. So, like, you're expecting, you go out on a date and you have a really great time with the person. It's like, yeah, all right, it's awesome. You know, if you come home, you do the happy girl dance, whatever it is. And he said, I'm going to call. I'll call you tomorrow. And so, of course, you're like, I'm not going to be that girl by my phone, but I'm also making sure it's not on vibrate. So, it's like, I'm waiting. And he never called. And before you know it, you're in your head, right?
Right.
Man, men are terrible. I can't trust anyone. See, nobody's ever going to love me. I'm not pretty. Whatever it is, right? You're there.
Right.
And then, 2 days later, you get a phone call from the guy, and he says, man, I'm so sorry. I really want to apologize for being out of touch. My grandfather died, and I've been dealing with things, and, I'm so sorry. Or it could be something more mundane. I lost my phone. I dropped it in the toilet, right? Whatever. But,
yeah,
but
right.
the guy calls, and you're like, okay. So this moment of looking for the alternative interpretations, you can go to the absolute most absurd thing. You could say, like, the guy got abducted by aliens, right, and he's being programmed.
Right.
We don't know what's going on. The point is that until you actually have a conversation with the person, you don't know what
right.
the reason
yeah.
is. And, but our propensity is to always go to us. We're very
uh-huh.
egotistic in this way. We always make it about ourselves.
We do,
but getting
yeah.
into this habit, right? But getting into this habit of pausing by
yeah.
challenging the initial false belief, we are actually weakening the neuronal connection rather than reinforcing it. So whenever that happens, every time we interrupt the firing of the neuronal pathway, we're weakening that particular road. And eventually, when we try to go down that path, our brain will instead shout, detour ahead, and we'll be able to go in a new direction. Because the next time you don't get that phone call you're expecting, instead of going down the road of I'm not pretty enough, nobody ever loves me, you have now the memory of reinserting a new thought. Oh,
right.
Maybe that person is stuck in traffic. Oh, maybe he lost his phone. Whatever. But the point is to interrupt the reinforcing at all costs.
Yes, I recently heard it said by someone, and it made a lot of sense to me, that the unquestioned mind is the reason for all suffering. Because our mind will come up with thoughts that are simply not true. And
Absolutely.
We believe them. We believe them.
Mm-hmm.
And usually they are, like you were saying, Rachel, that ego part, we don't think it's ego. We're thinking it's like normal, actually, that we start to go into that whirlwind of thinking negative thoughts about yourself. And it's really actually a very egotistic thing to do, Oh, he probably doesn't like me, and I must, I mustn't, like you were saying, I mustn't be enough of this or enough of that, or maybe I'm too much of something or other. And we get so narrowly focused in that part of our self that it's very difficult to take a step back and go, wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
Is that really true?
Mm-hmm.
And start questioning your mind, because then you have the opportunity to connect with a part of you that's going to start to answer those questions, in a
that's
way
right.
that's seeing you from the perspective that you really do want to see yourself. And then your mind will come up with a more, for you, response such as, well, maybe something happened and he just couldn't call me for a couple of days, you know,
mm-hmm.
instead of
right.
all of those thoughts that come in that are crazy and make you crazy, you know. So it's
yes.
great what you're doing. It's wonderful.
Yeah, you're right on point there, that the brain, it just basically will run away with itself. Your mind, you're thinking, you know, you will get carried away. And then out of our thinking flows everything else, right?
Right.
So from the
right.
thought becomes the emotion, becomes the behavior, right? And, you know, I'd like to say I haven't been that girl, but I've been that girl who's, like, got in her head, gone crazy, and then got to text in too much, like, where are you? What are you doing? You know, and then that feels bad, and then that reinforces another story, right? Like, oh, I'm
right.
foolish, or I'm not, you know,
yeah.
whatever
yeah.
it is. So it becomes this big, crazy cycle that we get into. And so really beginning to identify your most of us have, I would say, now I have no scientific research to back this up, but from my experience in working with people, I would say that at most we usually have about 5 really core false beliefs that we're carrying
right.
around that kind of are constantly running the show, and they may come in different shades of gray. They may be a little nuanced here and there, but really at the end of the day, when you get back down to them, it's the same kind of 5 ideas that you're working with quite often. And so one of the ways that you can begin identifying your kind of core false beliefs is paying really close attention in moments of upset, because that's when
right.
they really show up and rear their ugly head. You know, it's kind of that whatever your initial gut response is to anxiety or disappointment or upset, that's where you're going to be. Yeah. So I do want to put in one little word of caution here, if that's okay.
Sure.
Because I don't want people to walk away with the idea that interpretation is a bad thing. Interpretation
uh-huh.
is a good thing. Like, we need interpretation. We need to be able to look at that stranger walking down the street towards us and go, danger, and, you know, walk away. But what we want to do is begin understanding that by hitting the pause button, we give people more of an opportunity to kind of prove themselves and have an opportunity. But if they continue over and over and over again to, like, show that your interpretation actually is probably spot on, then you need to be aware of that as well. So, for example, in the instance of the guy not calling, right? Guy doesn't call, calls back later, says, I lost my phone. You go, okay, great. You know, glad everything's mm-hmm. okay. Let's go out again. And then 2 weeks later, we're in the same scenario. And
mm-hmm.
he said, I'm going to do this. And it doesn't happen. Right?
Right.
So you think, okay, you know, maybe I'll give him the benefit of the doubt again, you know, a little more wiggle room. But man, by the time you get to the 5th or the 6th time of that, you need to stop giving them the benefit of the doubt. And
right.
say, oh, this is just
right.
like making a bad interpretation, or I'm just, you know, thinking about, you know, there is a point where you are not really an interpretation or false belief or story. You are seeing, you know, a duck for a duck, and you need to be able to act on that.
Right.
So,
and actually,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's really more about your interpretation of him rather than yourself at that point, though. It's,
yep.
I would think when you start seeing a pattern in another person's behavior, it's like, well, you know, this is how this person acts. And
right.
it's not about if I'm pretty enough or if I'm good enough or whatever. It's more about that other person. And so that's when you can make a decision about, you know, do I deserve to be treated this way? You know, do I still want to hang around with this person? Or, you know, is it time to call a halt to this relationship?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, and so it's kind of one of these lines that you just want to tread very carefully, because people can get stuck in thinking, oh, I just need to let him, you know, tell me
mm-hmm.
what happened, and if he has a good enough excuse, then I just got into, you know, my stuff, and it's really not that big of a deal. And they forget
right.
that they're also really supposed to be evaluating the behavior and what the person is doing at the same time.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Well, Rachel, we are actually halfway through our show, so we want
right.
to take a moment to reintroduce Rachel Grant, who is the founder of Rachel Grant Coaching and is a trauma recovery and relationship coach. I definitely want to continue this. I would love to hear about these false premises. We have the 5 main ones, Rachel. But can you let everyone know how they can find out about you and your coaching and your program?
Please, yeah. So the website is rachelgrantcoaching.com, R-A-C-H-E-L-G-R-A-N-T as in Tom, coaching.com. And that's probably the best place to find me. I'm also on Facebook. I'm also on Twitter. But if they go to my website, they can link to any of those. The social media links are there. And right now I have my book up. So if they sign up for the newsletter, they'll get parts one and two of the guidebook, Beyond Surviving the Final Stage in Recovery from Sexual Abuse, for free. And I also have a workshop coming up in San Francisco, July 21st. It's an all-day workshop for $35, and information about registration is there on the website as well, as is a link for a free 60-minute session. So plenty of ways to reach me, plenty of ways to get in touch if folks are interested and would like to learn some more.
Very generous offerings, Rachel.
Yeah.
Wow. Fantastic. I hope, you know, anyone listening to this and listening back, if you yourself or know anyone who could benefit from Rachel's coaching, you can hear that she has quite a wonderful approach to releasing this type of traumatic experience and not let it hold you, imprison you the rest of your life. So thank you, Rachel. That's wonderful.
Absolutely.
Really wonderful. And I am Kathleen Martin, Certified Law of Attraction Life Coach. You can reach me at www.limitlesslifecoaching.com. I am the founder of Limitless Life Coaching, as well as a wellness coach at www.awesomehealthandwellness.com. So you can find out about me there and my coaching and my free offerings as well.
Okay. Thanks, Kathleen. And I am Astra Rowell, Certified Law of Attraction Coach, and I'm known as America's Life Purpose Coach. So you can find me at www.americaslifepurposecoach.com. And I also have free offerings on my website. So, yeah, you can check me out there and learn more about what I do.
That's great.
So let's
That's what
get
we're
back.
All about here on Coach Cafe.
I love it.
Yeah, it's all about self-empowerment. Yeah. So continue, Rachel. Really go into this, because this is helping. Definitely helping me, and I'm sure that anyone else listening back. You know, like you were saying, it doesn't have to be something as traumatic as sexual abuse, but we can all relate to some of these things. And it's very helpful to understand why you are believing the things that you're believing and thinking the thoughts you're thinking. So how we can rewire our own brains for a much better experience here. So if you could go further into those areas that we generally, all of us, carry these false ideas.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. So, you know, for me, I think part of what was so wonderful about coming to this idea and beginning to understand it and, you know, reading more about neurology was the fact that, you know, prior to that, there was this real sense of, it felt very nefarious. Like, how do I actually get my hands on this? Like, how do I actually get control? And not really control, but like, how do I really affect change here? And when you begin to understand that the brain is a biological functioning, you know, lump up there, machine, and that you can, you know, interact with it and engage with it, to me, it gave me very concrete, very doable, very actionable items. So one of the first things that I always do with my clients is I ask them to do a list of everything they want to know and believe about who they are. And I have them write these as generally as I am statements, right? Like, I am beautiful, I am valuable, I am smart, I am successful, I am important, I matter, whatever comes to mind. But I just usually ask them to, you know, kind of just start spilling it out, just say it, and when they reach that point of, okay, that's it, okay, we're going to give it a minute, now give me some more. But the idea here is that if you can really allow yourself the freedom of doing this exercise without self-censoring, what you're doing is you're starting to tap into all of the core beliefs that are sitting there, your authentic self that's there, but maybe pushed down a few layers underneath some false beliefs. So usually somebody who will come up with the, you know, I am valuable as a something they love to know and believe about who they are has the countering false belief, I'm worthless, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's information in and of itself. And also what you'll start to notice is that some of them will feel really good. They'll be like, yeah, I totally know that I'm amazing or I'm funny. But then when you get to something like I'm successful, it kind of feels like shoes that don't fit. And mm-hmm. that's the brain going, cannot compute, do not have that message. Like, it does not have it yet. And so that's a place to start focusing and building some new neuronal pathways. And one of the most very basic, like the most fundamentally basic way that you can begin is by simply saying what you want to believe out loud, right? And this is a little bit different from what you normally might hear of, like, positive affirmations. This isn't about, like, making yourself feel warm and gooey and yummy and that if you just say it, you're going to become it. And, you know, if you just mm-hmm. believe enough that you're going to make it. But what it does is it tunes your attention, right? Part of what's difficult and upsetting about the false beliefs is it keeps our eyes focused on very particular behaviors, very particular outcomes and experiences. And by starting in the morning saying, you know, this list of I am beautiful, I am valuable, I am worthy, I am funny, I am successful, I am intelligent, that sets out a very particular frame for you as you go through your day. And it's also challenging the pathways that are there that counter those negative thoughts. So that's kind of your most fundamental, most basic idea that you were at place to start.
So you're saying to get up in the morning and start just going through those statements or actually saying the statements mm-hmm. out loud, like first thing when you get up? Is that?
Yeah, that's the idea. And yeah. understanding that you're not doing it to make yourself warm and fuzzy. You're doing your mm-hmm. – it's like if you get up in the morning and you meditate, or you get up in the morning and you go for a run, you know, or you get up in the morning and you do yoga. This
right.
is your – morning exercise for your brain. It
okay.
sets your brain, it sets your intention for the day, it sets the brain in the right direction, right? It's like, okay, today I'm going to do 5 reps of I'm beautiful. You know, like think of it like that.
Okay, right. That's a great way of looking at it, yeah.
5 reps, I love that, yeah.
yeah. Like, I don't want you to go, and then all of a sudden you're, like, walking straight on the street, like, I'm the most gorgeous girl ever. No, this is, I mean, yes, you're going to start to feel this, and you're going to start, you know, expressing that, and that's the idea. The idea is that as you start to reinforce these ideas, then it trickles down into your behavior, it trickles down into your actions, right? I know for me, one of my strongest false beliefs was about not being worthy. And so I would wake up when I started this practice and I would say, I'm valuable. And there was literally a voice in my head that laughed. It said, ha, that's funny. Like, you know, like, whatever. What are you talking about? This is ridiculous. And I just said, okay, you know, thank you, brain, for your input. I'm going on with my day, right? And every morning, I am valuable. And then probably about 6 months later, I had this experience where I was with a friend, and his friend turned to me and she said, you know, you're just so shallow. I really don't know, like, I don't understand you at all. And I remember being so caught off guard by that, but also very, what are you talking about? That's not me at all. And I pulled my friend aside and I said, you know, I don't really know what that was all about, but I know one thing's for sure. I am way too valuable to be talked to that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, it fell out of my mouth without me even knowing it was going to come out of my mouth. And I stopped and thought, oh, my God, there it is. Like, here's huh. that moment where, like, the thought, the reframing, the training is now an action. Like, I'm running my marathon now, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the reason why we do these things. It isn't like a kitschy little, you know, silly mm-hmm. thing. It really is about bolstering the mind, getting yourself strong so that when you have those experiences, because life is going to challenge you, and it's almost like as soon as you identify a false belief, everything in the world conspires to try to reinforce it. So as soon as you
yeah.
start trying to fight it off and fight it back, life will come along to try to say, no, what are you talking about? You really aren't that worthy. You really aren't beautiful. So the more you exercise, the more you practice, when those experiences come along, you're prepared, you're ready, so that you can, you know, push back.
That was actually a really good experience to have her say that to you so that you could
yeah.
have the experience of affirming yourself mm-hmm. and realizing, wow, you know, that's taking root. So that was actually kind of neat.
yeah, absolutely.
I had a similar experience.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, please do. No, you do.
I was going to say I was totally relating to what you were saying just then, Rachel, because I had this experience, and you know, they come from like, you go like, wow, where did that come from, right? Mm-hmm. When something like kind of abrupt like that happens, and it does reinforce that you know for sure, you know, because you're not going to take it, kind of thing,
right?
And like you're simply not going to let somebody treat you like that. So it proves to you how you have a belief then about yourself, because it does come out of, it's like the universe does give you this opportunity to kind of practice it.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost felt like after I had the experience, it was almost like this actor showed up in front of my face that was sent to by the universe to kind of give me the opportunity to have a true experience, right? It was a true experience because, you know, you didn't know it was coming.
Right.
So I was at work the other day, and I got a phone call from someone. It was a customer of where I work, and they were really rude, very rude, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my response to the person was simply, I don't know if you've ever had an experience like this, when somebody is like, it was over the phone, but it would have been like right in your face, you know, when they were really rude to you and talking down to you, like in a demeaning way.
Mm-hmm.
And the person said their part, and I said to them, when you're not rude anymore, you can call me back. And I hung up on them. And because I'm also coming from this place of, with my training, that person has got to be really out of alignment to be behaving like that, because you know, their behavior was certainly showing it. And here I am on the other end of the phone giving them an opportunity at the same time to tap into something about themselves too, you know, because I simply was not going to sit there and like go, you know, go into another mode, which I would have done a long time ago, which would have kind of taken it on myself and figured I must have done something wrong.
Right. Yeah, that's a perfect example. So like the what happened of that experience is someone is upset and being rude or yelling or dysfunctional, and then your interpretation in the past would have been, it's my fault, I'm responsible for that, I've got to make it right, kind of a thing. Whereas now you were able to skip that and go straight to your new understanding of self, and instead go to, I don't deserve that, this isn't my problem, this is about the other person.
Exactly. And it was really after, it kind of threw me a little bit, because I was a little bit like, it was like it blew my hair back how rude this person was being. But it didn't have anything to do with me. And that's a great place to be, because there was once upon a time when I kind of felt like everything was my fault, you know. And so it gives you the chance to see your growth and expansion when the universe gives you an opportunity to practice that exact belief. Right?
That's right. Yeah,
right.
And you can even
good.
Go another layer deeper, just to the level of being of humanity and empathy, and begin doing alternate interpretations of why she was rude. Maybe your husband just broke up with her. Maybe she doesn't have any money. Yeah, exactly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what that does is it also keeps us from and I'm not saying you were being, but I know you from this, and you're a coach, you know what to do, but other people, and when we're not totally aware of what we're doing, we can become really harsh with people, right? We can say, well, you know, that person is being this way, and we can do the correct work of keeping ourselves out of story or out of false belief, and that's really good. But we, you know, if we don't do that alternative interpretation, we walk away thinking that we know exactly what that person was up to, when actually we still don't. Right?
No, we don't. I didn't have any clue. I don't know what their beliefs are. I don't know what their day was like. I don't know anything. But when you can kind of maintain that kind of, I at the same time, no, you don't get to speak to me like that, right?
Absolutely.
And you
that's
have to
right.
be.
That's right.
And,
but that's like the fourth layer. That's now like we're getting into the deeper layers here, which is like the fourth step here of getting into communication with people, right? A lot of the reason why we can stay stuck is in our loops and our false beliefs is because we don't talk to people about things. We don't go to that guy and say, hey, you know, when you didn't call, I began to think that, you know, you didn't care or you weren't going to be here for me or whatever, and I just want to check in on that. Or I just want to let you know that, you know, sometimes I have the tendency to go there, right? And the great thing is when we do that, it's two things. First, we give the person an opportunity to come back and say, no, you know, wait a minute, that was not what I wanted you to get out of that at all. And two, we give up the false belief. And the person kind of gets to play the game with us now if it's somebody that we trust and we want to have on our team in that way. And when we see ourselves or they see us kind of getting into those loops, they can call us on it. Be like, hey, friend, you know, I think you're over there in, you know, story land again. Come back over here, you know. So that piece of understanding that when we have experiences, unless we get into conversation, we are in the world of interpretation. And we may be making really very concise and very intuitive and very strong and next to correct interpretations, but they're still interpretation until you get into communication.
So what stops people from doing that? That's such a good point that, boy, just a little conversation could certainly clear things up. Is it because we're so, when we're trapped in these beliefs, we're so self-focused that it doesn't occur to us that perhaps something's going on with the other person that we need to check out? Or is it fear, do you think?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that a lot of times the tendency is, boy, I'm just not going to bring that up. Because, quite honestly, one of the interpretations that you might have of, like, the person doesn't care, it could be right. You know, the person might not actually care. I care about it, you know. So there's always the, you know, one of my relatives, he always says, don't ask a question you don't want an answer to. So, you know, I think we fall into that sometimes. But unfortunately, you know, when you get down to the bare bones of it and to the fact of the matter is you don't want to be in that. You don't want to be in the kind of pretending and faking it place.
Right.
You know, you want to know, okay, this is really what's going on. The person, you know, isn't really invested here or whatever the case may be. So getting past that and being able to be open to whatever the response is that the person has. And quite frankly, too, sometimes false beliefs, they feel good, right? The brain is, it's natural. It's where it's supposed, you know, there's no work. It takes work to get out of it, right? Sometimes it's easier just to lay on that couch and be in it. And you know what?
Yeah.
That's okay. Mm-hmm. If you have a day where you're just in it, that's okay. Don't make yourself bad or wrong. You know, I have those days sometimes. But the difference is that the difference once you begin to do this work, because our interpretations are never going to go away. Our false beliefs are never going to go away. But what does change for us is the frequency with which they show up, up their, you know, ugly head, and the duration with which we stay stuck in it, right? So, you know, in my, you know, survivor life, I could be in a false belief for months, right? Now I might be in a false belief for a day.
Right.
But the amount of times that happens is so far less than it ever did, you know, than it did before. So you don't want to be too harsh on yourself. You don't want to get into a nasty habit of kind of blaming, because all that does is it just makes it go in, you dig in deeper, right? You dig into the, I'm messing up again, or here I go again. That's just another false belief that you're reinforcing. So, you know, sometimes you just have to be with it. Sometimes it's like, I don't want to go to the gym today. I just want to sit on the couch and eat Twinkies, whatever it is. So we all have those days. Don't punish yourself for them. But the great thing is that you'll also be aware of it, right? You'll kind of see it now from the outside and going, okay, yes, I know I'm over here in my false beliefs. Yes, I see myself doing that, and I know I should really do the work to get out of it, but I don't want to. But just the very fact that you now have this counterweight of being able to see what you're doing will help move you out of it so much more quickly and so, you know, sooner. And also having people on your team who you can call up and be like, man, I'm really stuck in something right now. Can I just talk it out? You know,
uh-huh.
That's also really helpful.
Very helpful.
Yeah.
Very helpful.
Yeah, no matter who you are. I mean, Kathleen and I will call each other sometimes and say, okay,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
Well, I'm just stuck here, and, yeah, I need a partner. I need somebody to, you know,
mm-hmm.
help me out of this.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the happiness habits is to surround yourself with support.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the dangers of false beliefs is they do feel isolating. You know, we become, it's like all about my own world and it's all about me. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just this little teeny space. It's so confining. It's so constricting. And so one of the things that I love about doing this work is that as you start to pull away these layers of false beliefs, the person's authentic self just naturally shows up. You know, I'm never necessarily building anything new in. It's really more a matter of pulling away these, you know, cobwebs and the dust and all the grime so that, you know, the true, authentic, beautiful self can just be there and be seen and be expressed. And, you know, that's, you know, really amazing. And, you know, to be able to do that working together, but, we, you know, we need help with that sometimes because sometimes it's hard to, first of all, see what it is that we're stuck in. And then other times to, you know, have that stamina. It's just like working out. People get their, you know, buddy system and, you know, workout
mm-hmm.
partner, all that thing to do to really help.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Certainly do better with a buddy.
So I thought I might just quickly summarize the four steps. I know we're drawing right close to the end here. So I thought maybe I'd just do a quick summary. Would that be helpful if I just kind of...
Oh, definitely.
Okay. So the first kind of top layer approach that you want to have is to simply sit down and write your everything I want to know and believe about who I am. And, you know, even if the brain goes, what are you doing? Don't write that down. That's ridiculous. Write it down anyway. And begin a practice of, on a daily occasion, reading those out loud. And out loud is really important because the brain hears information and processes more deeply when it hears it as opposed to when you just read it and kind of do it in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing is to begin paying attention when you have experiences that are upsetting or you're just out in the world, doing this practice of paying attention to what happened and what you're making it mean, what happened and your interpretation. You are doing this all the time, so you can take any situation that you're in. Like, girl walks across the street with the boy and she tries to take his hand and he doesn't respond. What did I just make that mean? What was my interpretation? Oh, he doesn't love her. He doesn't like her that much, you know? No, you know, I mean, there's a million different things. So you can do it for other people as well to start the practice, to start
mm-hmm.
paying attention to the things that you also have about yourself. My friend didn't call. I made it mean. My interpretation is this. And then go to that third step of looking for the alternative interpretation, interrupting, hitting the pause button, looking for other options, and then if appropriate and necessary, do the fourth step of getting into communication, going to the person, and finding out what actually really is going on.
That's great. That's great, Rachel.
So that is wonderful information for people to take away. And so, Rachel, since we are getting so close to the end, I want to make sure that you repeat your website and your offer.
Okay. So it's rachelgrantcoaching.com, RachelGrant as in Tom, coaching.com. And a couple of different options there on the website. Folks in San Francisco can look for and register for the all-day workshop coming up July 21st. This will be covering what I would normally cover in the first three sessions of the program that is 16 sessions long. Will all be offered in a one-day workshop, and it's all very valuable. It goes into some of the stuff that we've talked about today, but also other topics such as integrity and relationship and setting and keeping boundaries. There's also an option, a button there, to sign up for a 60-minute free discovery session to talk about coaching, if that's something that you might be interested in pursuing. And then the last thing is you can find the PDF version, parts 1 and 2 of my book, there for signing up in the newsletter. You'll get those for free. So just in the bottom right corner, click sign up and just register for the newsletter and I'll get that out to you.
Wonderful.
Excellent. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, ladies. Yeah, it's always
thank
a real
you,
pleasure.
Great to have you back.
Too. So really
great.
Yeah.
And so
we'll
that
do it
is
again.
Our show
we'll
for
do
today.
It again.
Absolutely. Take care, you two.
You too, Rachel. Thanks again. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. See you next week.